What's with Melita? Petros asks as he sweeps me away. The last thing I see is Reuben enthusiastically engaging in the dance with Petros's old partner. Then my eyes are on Petros. I'm laughing at the whole exchange, heady with taking Melita's dance partner, giddy with the relief that there are men still willing to dance with me, drunk on the thought that Myron will be out of the picture soon enough. Petros regales me with stories of his recent escapades. Lord Osias and Lord Bannis apparently got into a fight over him. They're both nursing mild wounds this evening, so he has had to find other partners to entertain himself with. After a total of two dances, Petros twirls me outward, sending me into another man's arms. Leandros, I say, where have you been? Important people never arrive on time to events, but it seems I've missed much of the fun. No, I say, you're just in time for it. Over his shoulder, I see Petros finding a lady to dance with. Meanwhile, Reuben is literally walking away from Melita, trying to outdistance her. I suppose my advice to play the perfect fiancé was too much to ask of him. Leandros is more than an accomplished dancer, with the skill in which he lifts me off the floor and spins me in the air. As I feel his hands in mine, feel his arms come around me as we go through the steps of the dance, I can't help but wonder if I will ever feel Callias in this way. Chapter 12. It is the dead of night when we return from the ball, and Reuben and I swap money for a letter in my rooms. Petros is with us, insisting he wouldn't miss out on the fun, and he also proclaims to be an excellent forger. Reuben and I look over his shoulder as he finishes the letter. Dearest Melita, I have watched you from afar for too long. I can no longer keep my feelings to myself. Your beauty is like the light of the sun. It almost hurts to look at you, and you make it impossible for me to look at anyone else. Please, I must speak with you alone. Will you meet me in your rooms at 9 o'clock on the evening of the... blank? Will you greet me with a kiss, so I may know if your feelings for me burn as brightly as mine do for you? Your humble servant, Orin Galopas, Earl of Eliades. We compare his writing to the note Orin sent me. Petros has managed the shape of Orin's letters perfectly. No one would know the difference. It's unlikely that the note will fall into anyone's hands but Melita's, but better safe than sorry. If our plan to save Reuben from this marriage is to work, it needs to be flawless. What now? Reuben asks. Now all that's left, I say, is to wait for Orin to arrive back at the palace. When he does, we add the date to the letter, and then I will seal it with Orin's crest. Then you must get this letter to Melita without her spotting you delivering it. But how will you get his crest? Petro stands from his chair and cracks his back. He's in love with her, you dolt. How do you think she'll gain access to his rooms and get his crest? She'll play him. Reuben grips me in a hug, smashing me against his bright red and yellow brocade vest. You really are the best, Alessandra. If this works, I owe you my life. Don't be so dramatic, Petro says. Would you want a life with Melita? Reuben challenges. Fair point. Yes, you owe her your life, and I'll take the 50 nekos you promised for the use of my penmanship. When did I promise you that? I leave the two of them to playfully bicker, my skirts heavily laden with an envelope full of money. I spend my morning away from the palace, running a few necessary errands. I distribute Reuben's money carefully, wisely, and when I return to the palace, my smile is full and earnest. Until I run into Lord Icarus Vasco on the way back to my rooms. Ah, Lady Stathos, just who I was looking for. Is everything all right? I ask. Of course. Why shouldn't everything be all right? Because the head of the King's Council has sought me out. You practically threatened me during our last conversation. Vasco tilts his head to the side. You and I remember that conversation very differently. I smile politely, but my teeth grind together behind my lips. No, I merely wanted to ask how your courtship with the king is coming along. Callias is so private. The young king won't say a word about it. And neither will I. Vasco nods to himself, as though expecting this answer. I wonder if that it is perhaps because the courtship isn't happening at all? I blink. I beg your pardon. He sends you gifts, and you enjoy each other's company during mealtimes. But what else? To my knowledge, you spend no other time with each other. He does not accompany you to any events. Has he even kissed you yet? I round on the man. That is none of your business, and you know perfectly well just how busy the king is. He doesn't attend events with me because he's in meetings with you and the council. To be sure, I know exactly what Callias spends his time doing, but he has a council to take care of things until he is of age. Now is the perfect opportunity to rely on us to run the kingdom for him while he spends his time with a beautiful young lady, such as yourself. I can't think of a single thing to say to the man in return. Unless, of course, the courtship isn't real. In which case, the council will start arranging for more ladies to meet with the king, and we will have no use for you. And with that, Vasco leaves. I hate not having the last word in a conversation. Absolutely loathe it. What's worse, the council isn't falling for our ruse. And if there's no ruse, then Callias has no need to keep me around. How am I to win him for real, then? I let myself into my rooms, Vasco's threats ripe within my mind.
Alessandra!
I jump a foot into the air. How the blazes do people keep getting into my rooms? Father? He crosses his arms over his chest.
I thought perhaps my letters to you were going astray, but it would appear you are receiving your mail just fine.
His eyes point toward the mountain of invitations I've already opened and read. Among them is Orin's love letter. Reuben returned it to me, having no use for it after Petros made his forgery. I frown at it distastefully. I was getting around to writing you.
Undoubtedly, he says with sarcasm. You've gotten caught up in the palace, in the finery, in the attention. You've forgotten your entire purpose for being here.
A headache pounds at my temples, and red tinges the corners of my vision. I've been focusing on winning the king's favor, which is why I haven't had time to write you. Things are progressing perfectly. If there were something to tell you, I'd tell you. He paces back and forth in front of my wardrobe.
Perfectly, is it? Then perhaps you can tell me why word has reached me that the king never accompanies you to events outside the palace. In fact, I hear you're in the company of that Caligaris boy constantly.
I can't focus on Father as my eye begins to twitch. I assure you, I have everything under control. There's no need to fret. I have the king right where I want him. And Myron will no longer be an issue. In fact, once I have a chat with him, he'll be leaving the palace. Permanently. Father's face changes. At first, I cannot read it. Then it dawns on me with horror. Pity.
Alessandra, darling, you tried your best. There comes a time when we must admit we've been defeated. You had a good run at the palace, but the king clearly doesn't want you. But don't you worry. We are not ruined. I've made plans.
My fingers slowly curl into fists at my sides. What did you do?
I reached out to Lord Eliades. No, don't give me that look. He's rich, and he will give me a nice bride price for your hand.
He's an earl.
I'm an earl.
You deemed him unacceptable for Chrysantha, but acceptable for me? He pauses only a beat before saying,
Your circumstances are different.
Because she is his favorite, and I am not. The point is to elevate my station. Why would you try to make me a countess when I'm trying to become a queen? Father shakes his head sadly.
I'm proud of you for trying, but it's an important lesson to learn to recognize when you've been beaten.
I know when I've been beaten, and I have barely even started.
You will see reason, he adds, once you've had time to come to terms with everything. Now, why don't you let me escort you home?
I look up to the ceiling, gathering my thoughts and calming my tone. Let me make things perfectly clear, Father. I am not cattle you can sell off, and you can't force me into a marriage I don't want. Not when the king himself is providing for my every comfort.
Father purses his lips. You will wed Eliades or be disinherited.
Then disinherit me. The king sends me expensive gifts. I have plenty of money, and I live in the palace. There is nothing you can do to threaten me. You've outlived your usefulness, Father. You got me into the palace, and now I can take it from here. In fact, once I win the king's favor, I'll make sure you don't see one penny out of my treasury. The room goes quiet, and Father looks at me in alarm for all of a second.
Take some time before you resort to dramatics, Alessandra. I will check in with you later.
He strides from the room, but his steps are unsure. Before the sun is quite up the next morning, long before the servants should arrive, I let myself into Myron's rooms. He hasn't bothered to lock his doors, so I open one door after the next until I find the bedroom. The setup is completely identical to my room. However, Myron hasn't gone through any trouble to decorate to his own tastes. I slide over to the bed on slippered feet and let my gaze take in Myron's sleeping form. So vulnerable. If I wanted to kill him, I could do it now. But what I've done to Myron is so much sweeter than letting him get off easy with death. I reach down one gloved hand and flick the end of his nose as hard as I can. Myron inhales deeply and sits up in one movement, his eyes widening until he realizes it's me in the room. He rubs the sleep from his eyes.
If you're here because you've changed your mind about the nature of our relationship, I'm afraid I don't want you anymore, Myron says after a long yawn. Now kindly leave so I can go back to sleep.
He makes to settle back into his blankets. This time, I slap him. That gets his attention.
What the hell? He demands. Need I remind you?
I hold a paper before his nose. You're going to leave the palace immediately. As soon as I walk out that door, you will pack up your things and be gone, never to return. I never want to see your face or hear your name again.
What is this? He reaches for the note,
but I yank it back lest he get any ideas of destroying it. This is a debtor contract. Myron scrunches his nose in confusion. I have purchased all of your debts, I say simply, from the club, from the men you owe money to. All of it. You now owe me 5,000 nekos. His whole body goes perfectly still. Nothing to say? I ask. Let me make this perfectly clear in case you don't understand. I own you. One misstep from you, and I send you to debtor's prison for inability to pay on your substantial debts. How long do you think it would take your brother to get you out of there? Or do you think he'd even bother? I watch every move of Myron's throat as he swallows, relishing every second of his new misery. You will give back any money you've accepted from the nobility, and you will cease to claim any connection to me. If you so much as breathe in a direction I don't like, I'll make sure you never see the outside of a jail cell. I reach forward and pat his cheek mockingly. There's a good lad. Now off with you.
You're lying, he says as I reach for the door to leave.
Am I? Shouldn't take too long for you to verify for yourself. But don't dally. You have until lunch to be gone. My smile is radiant as I leave his rooms. I only have control over one man. And yet, the power of it washes over me in intoxicating waves of heat. When I am queen, Will I experience it 1,000-fold, knowing I will command 10s of 1,000s? With the thrill of victory still upon me, I go in search of Callias. It's early in the day still, surely too early for meetings. After hailing down several servants, I'm finally told the king is breakfasting in the library. Why didn't he extend me an invitation? I learn why as soon as a servant admits me into the room. Callias is surrounded by correspondences. Amid countless papers and writing utensils, I think I see a bowl with hard-boiled eggs, and half a piece of toast lies face down on a book nearby. A book I suspect he is using as a paperweight. Now don't you make being king look grand, I say. The Shadow King looks up from the letter he is composing. It is good to see you, Alessandra. I feel like it's been ages. That's because it has. He winces slightly. I hope you can see for yourself that I've had good reasons for my absence. He gestures wildly at the parchment he's drowning in. At the movement, a whirl of shadow follows his arms. We have a problem, I say without any more preamble. Are you all right? He asks, looking up and giving me a quick once-over. Icaros Vasco came to see me. He questioned whether our courtship is real. He suspects us. My father even showed up at the palace to take me home because he was so convinced I'd failed to win you. Callias finally sets down his pen. How is that possible? Then a look of annoyance creases his face. Is this because of the time you've been spending with that Caligaris boy? Damn it, Alessandra, you shouldn't have— It is because of you, I say, daring to cut him off. He stands and clasps his hands together in front of him, his shadows darkening to midnight tendrils. I have done nothing but show my interest in you. You sit at my immediate right during meals. I sent you gifts. I wait for him to go on, but I realize he doesn't have anything else to sell his point. You hardly ever join us for meals anymore. True, you send me gifts, but you never accompany me to events away from the palace. Your neglect of me is showing. Myron started to take advantage of that, but I have done away with him. You need to do more, especially since we cannot behave as a normal courting couple. Whatever do you mean by that? Normal courting couples whisper sweet nothings into the other's ear. They laugh when they are close together, sharing breath. Normal couples can't keep their hands off each other. We can't do those things, he says, his words clipped. We don't have to do those things. That's not what I'm saying. Devils, do you want to sell our act of courtship? Then court me, Callias. Take me on outings away from the palace. Spend time with me outside of mealtimes. Deliver your gifts to me in person. Act like a man who is infatuated. He watches me a long moment, considering my words carefully, I hope. No, he says slowly. No. More firmly this time, as though convincing himself. He looks around at the mountain of papers. I haven't the time for that. A convenient excuse. What is holding him back? I would ask you to join me, he says, but as you can see, there isn't room at the table. I will see you when I see you. He flicks his fingers toward the door, a silent dismissal. I am fully aware that I look like a child as I stomp back toward my rooms, but no one is around to see, so I indulge myself. When I hear someone rounding the corner up ahead, I straighten and allow my slippers to tread normally. I do my best to keep my irritation at the intruder at bay. Yes, this is my corridor.
Two letters for you, my lady, a servant says with a bow, extending a silver platter in my direction.
I retrieve the envelopes before disappearing into my room. The first is for my sister. I stare at her perfect handwriting for a full minute before deciding I should probably read the letter before throwing it into my lit hearth.
Dear sister, I hope this letter finds you in good health. Court life holds many temptations, but I trust you are remaining penitent and chaste. The Duke and I are having a marvelous time together. His health is declining, sadly, so our days mostly consist of me reading aloud the greatest works of poetry.
I skim over more paragraphs of the terribly dull activities she does with the Duke and the various gifts he presents her.
10 carriages! Whatever will I do with so many?
And then, in true Chrysantha fashion, a few lines of importance buried at the end of her letter.
A constable came by the estate today, asking what I know about your relationship 3 years ago with Hector Galanis. I thought all the questions odd, of course, but at the very end, the Baron of Drivas demanded to know if I thought you could have had anything to do with his disappearance. Fear not. Well, I told them you were a trollop and undoubtedly slept with the man. You would never do something so terrible as help estrange a noble from his family. Such an odd exchange, don't you think? I do hope you will enjoy the rest of your stay at the palace, and I hope you've made some friends who will influence you for good. Your loving sister, Chrysantha. I stare at my hands for far too long before I realize I've dropped the letter. I don't even know where to begin processing the various levels of my sister's ineptitude and carelessness. I hadn't known she was aware of my nighttime relationships, and now the Baron knows I slept with his son, as well as a constable, who clearly has his backing. How many more interviews do they plan to conduct before coming to question me personally? And how long will it take before word of my nighttime activities reaches the palace and destroys my relationship with the king for good? I snatch the letter and tear it into unreadable pieces before thrusting it amid the flames. I want to yank handfuls of Chrysantha's hair from her scalp. She's always taken everything from me. But how did she possibly manage to take this, too? It is only after several minutes of pacing my room that I remember a second letter arrived. Could it possibly be even more bad news? With dread, I break the seal and unfold the parchment.
Dearest Alessandra, forgive the impertinence, but I can't help but notice how miserable you seem at the events of late. I thought I might do something to cheer you up. I wonder if you might be up for a different kind of entertainment. Would you permit me to take you out for an evening? Shall we say tomorrow night at 8 o'clock? I promise you will not regret it. Your servant, Leandros Vasco.
Perhaps this is just the opportunity I need. I've been meaning to ask Leandros questions about the king. I need more information to make Callias mine. And what better way to get it than to ask a man who used to be Callias's best friend? Not to mention the fact that Leandros adores me. I deserve to be adored for an evening, don't I? Especially when Callias won't deign to take the time to see me. After only a little further deliberation, I write back. Dear Leandros, I would be delighted to join you. Sincerely, Alessandra Stathos.
Chapter 13. I look distastefully at the swathes of dark cotton in Leandros's outstretched hands. You expect me to wear that? I ask. Leandros grins from where he stands inside the receiving area of my rooms. I have an evening planned for us, but you can't go dressed like that.
What's wrong with how I look? I took great care dressing today. My gown is a light purple that clings tightly to my legs. No bustle or petticoats in sight. I've never felt more comfortable. The outfit was, of course, chosen because it matches the new shawl Callias gifted me. Made from lavender satin, the shawl has woven tassels hanging from the ends, dripping with amethysts. I thought perhaps it might irritate him if he ever learned I wore it while entertaining another man. Although, that other man is currently dressed like a servant. With cotton trousers, scuffed boots, and a threadbare white shirt, he looks ready to crawl under a bridge to sleep for the night. You look rich and irresistible,
Leandro says. That won't do for where we're headed today.
I feel my face scrunch up into an uncomfortable frown, but I can't seem to care. Where are you taking me?
It's a surprise.
I still don't reach for the clothes.
Look, you can either go to bed early tonight, or you can do something a little dangerous and a lot of fun.
He thrusts the clothes into my arms and shoves me toward my bedchamber. When I emerge, I look down at myself. I wear a white blouse with loose sleeves gathered at the wrists. The overskirt is a plain black, wrapping tightly around my breasts and midriff before falling loosely about my legs. It's plain, boring, peasant-like. Leandro stands behind me and lets down my immaculate hair.
Stop!
Too late. The strands fall about my face in loose waves.
It took my maid an hour to do that.
And it was lovely, Leandro says. Something about the wicked gleam in his eyes stops me from protesting too much. This will be an adventure, even if I'm clothed poorly, and Leandros will pay me attention the entire night. It's what I told him I wanted from Callias, and having another man vie for my attention, one who isn't blackmailing me to do so, is too good an opportunity to pass up. It's petty, I know. But I want to punish Callias, and I need a distraction, just for a night, from the baron and constable who are set on ruining me. Let's get out of here before anyone sees me, I huff. Grinning, Leandro shuffles me down the hallway before we turn into a servant's stairway and make our way down. Behind the palace, two horses are saddled and ready for us, a stable boy holding them by the reins. Leandros flicks the boy a coin before bending down next to me and cupping his hands together.
What are you doing?
Helping you onto your horse. Realizing my confusion, he adds, you can't ride side saddle. Peasant girls don't do that sort of thing.
I am no peasant.
Tonight you are. Now step up. I realize right then that I have a choice to make. Either I do this, or I don't. But no more shrieking, because I'm a lady. I didn't opt to go off with Leandros because I wanted to be treated like a lady. Ladies don't spend time alone with men who aren't their relations. They don't cavort with the former best friend of the king to get more information about how to seduce said king. I step onto his cupped hands and swing one leg over the horse. The fabric of my skirt rises up my legs, and Leandros helps to ride it, positioning the material so I'm covered. But as he does so, a finger brushes my bare calf. I draw in a breath. It's been weeks since I've been touched, longer than I've gone in years.
Forgive me, he says. I didn't mean...
No need, I say. Lead on. I'm ready for this promised entertainment.
Leandro leaps onto his own horse. Then let's be off.
Down stone-paved lanes and past candlelit lanterns we travel, Leandros's horse ahead of mine. We curve down the streets of the mountain, layer after layer of quiet neighborhoods, run-down inns, and even a body house. There aren't many out on the streets, not this late at night when it's far too dark for the merchants to sell their wares. Part of me feels guiltier and guiltier the farther we travel from the palace, as though I'm abandoning my entire purpose. But that's not so. I need a night out, an escape. And tonight is not without its purpose.
Tell me, I say as the horses turn onto another road, what were you like as a younger man?
Ignorant, hopeful, carefree.
More carefree than you are now?
He grins, his teeth shining in the moonlight.
A great deal more.
You were friends with the future king. What sort of mischief did the two of you get up to? I hope the question is a good transition, hiding the fact that I'm hungry for information about Callias. He thinks a moment.
We once caught frogs from the lake and put them in his tutor's bed.
I'm sure she deserved it.
She had a dreadfully stoic voice, and Callias wondered if he could do anything to prompt a change in the tone.
I laugh, and you were all too eager to help him.
He was my only friend for a while. We did so much together. Fencing, riding, gaming. Callias loves competition.
He loves winning. But then, what man doesn't? What person doesn't, I meant for him. Do you love competition, Alessandra? Of course. Good. Now I'm even more convinced you will enjoy tonight's entertainment. We come to a stop at an unassuming building. All straight walls and quiet darkness. Leandros ties the horses to a nearby post. I fear they might not still be there when we return, but I'm not about to let that ruin the evening. Somehow, Leandros finds a staircase. I suppose one must know to look for it in order to find it. He takes my arm and leads me downward until we're encased in blackness, unable to see a thing. I should tell you, I told my maids who I went out with tonight. If I don't return, they'll know you murdered me. I can hear his smile in the dark. You won't be dying at my hands. It's only a little farther. A creak of hinges and rush of air later, we enter through a basement door. A lonely torch sends a flicker of light about the corridor. Distantly, I hear the low rumble of what might be shouting. As we traverse the new corridor, Leandro says, "Whatever you do, stay close to me the entire time." We round a corner, travel down a smaller set of stairs, and then finally, we plunge into a doorway spilling out light and noise and the stench of ale. "Boxing?" I say when I take in the scene before me. Up ahead, the room slopes gently downward, allowing us a view of the scene in the middle. Two men face each other, bouncing on the toes of their bare feet, their sleeves rolled up to their elbows, sweat dripping down their faces. Coins exchange hands. Girls walk about with cups atop trays. Men and women shout to the challengers, booing and cheering. "Let's get closer," Leandro says, ushering me toward an empty table. We sit, and a girl dressed similarly to me comes forward, asking if we'd like anything to eat or drink. "An ale for me," Leandro says before looking at me. "I'll have the same." Why not? Just because I have a taste for fine wines doesn't mean I can't sample something simpler now and then. We turn our heads to the scene below, just in time to see the bigger contender catch the smaller one in the chin with a vicious uppercut. The one who was hit flies backward, crashing to the wood floor with an audible thump. The crowd explodes with a mixture of cheers and groans. The barmaid returns with our drinks, plopping one down before each of us. Leandro brings the mug to his lips, downing half the contents in one go. Not to be outdone, I raise my own cup to my lips, trying not to taste the vulgar liquid as it streams down my throat. Bitter and watered down, it's positively disgusting. But it leaves a warmth in my belly. I drain the whole cup before tossing it back on the table. "I knew you would appreciate this place," Leandro says. "You play the dignified daughter of the nobility well. But just under the skin, there's a girl waiting to have some fun." My grin isn't forced. "How often do you come here?" "Not nearly often enough. My uncle expects a lot of me. If he ever knew I were here..." He cuts off with a shudder. I let out an unladylike grunt. "No talk of responsibilities tonight. Responsibility is why Callias claims he can't spend any time with me. Utter nonsense. If anyone can make anything happen, it's the king. If he wants a less busy schedule, he should command it." "If anyone can bring him out of his shell, it's you. Give it time. And if he doesn't ever come around, well, there's always me." Leandros' cup is now empty as well, and he raises two fingers to the barmaid. Another especially loud exclamation sounds from the crowd as the brutish contender fouls another foe. "I have to marry a wealthy man," I say. "My father is greedy, and he won't let me have anything less." Oh, wait. No, I suppose that's not true anymore. Is it? In the midst of all the things that aren't going my way right now, I forgot my father and his situation are no longer a problem. "Lucky for you, I'm disgustingly rich," Leandro says. "And you're content with being a consolation prize?" "You get used to it when living in the palace with the king."
I fold my arms. I was under the impression that the king didn't show an interest in any ladies before I came to court.
He doesn't have to. They still want him and have to settle for me. But I'm sure you won't have that problem.
The second glass of ale is placed before me. This one manages to taste better than the first. He won't break his rules, I say. Not even for me. The ale must be freeing my tongue a bit, but I can't seem to care too much.
The no touching is a problem?
I hide my face behind my glass. Women have needs just as much as men do. Leandros's teeth show as he raises his cup.
Perhaps he only needs you to make the first move.
And end up at the gallows? I think not.
Then you will have to find someone else to satisfy those needs. At least in the meantime.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
I am a man of base interests.
Ale, sport, sex.
I have want of nothing else.
I can't imagine why you don't already have a lady of your own.
All evidence to the contrary,
he says, swaying his mug toward me. A delicious cloudiness fills my mind, and I find myself offering more smiles to Leandros than I normally would. Are you trying to get me drunk? I ask.
Even if I were, it wouldn't be to take advantage, only to help you have a better time. Now come.
He rises from his seat and grabs one of my hands. I raise my cup to down the rest of its contents, only to find it already empty. How did that happen? My feet are only slightly unsteady when Leandros and I push into the crowd circling the newest contenders. We manage to squeeze our way to the front. The big brute still remains undefeated.
Watching is only half the fun,
Leandros shouts to be heard over the shrieks within the room.
Winning is the true sport.
A young boy no older than 12 runs around the outer circle, carrying a large goblet in front of him.
Place your bets here! 10-1 odds for our newest contender!
A smaller man with a crooked nose has entered the circle of onlookers. After stripping off his shirt, he windmills his arms and bounces from foot to foot. Leandros holds out a note.
10 nekos says the brute wins. Not very sporting of you, sir,
the boy says in return, accepting the money and stuffing it into the cup.
I bet to win. And how about the missus? Will you be placing a bet? Do be sporting and root for the smaller man. He may surprise us yet.
I survey both contenders carefully, watching their movements. The one with the crooked nose is so much smaller, but he is fresh, where the brute has expended much energy already. Still, the larger man looks as though he could pick up Crooked Nose and bend him in half with little effort. I'm about to decline the bet, when I notice something. The brute stretches his arms out in front of him, but as he does so, he winces ever so slightly before rubbing a hand over his right side. Bruised ribs, likely. Though he's winning the matches, he's taken a few hits. They're wearing on him.
Why not?
I say finally. Shall we say, I make a show of rummaging through my pockets, 25 nekos on the little man?
A fine bet, miss,
the lad says, ripping the money greedily from my fingers and then scampering off quickly as though afraid I'll change my mind.
That was foolish, Leandro says. You know, the boy is only given scraps of what the owner wins off the bets.
I didn't do it out of charity for the boy. I intend to win. His scoff turns into a laugh.
I don't want you sour for the rest of the night. You'll blame me for the loss of all your money.
I roll my eyes, and we turn to watch the match. The contestants stand up to a line drawn on the floor and watch for a mediator to slap his hand on the ground before the two tear into each other. Crooked Nose is quick on his feet, sending jabs at the brute before scampering out of reach. The brute watches him carefully, keeping his eyes on his outstretched fists. After a duck, he brings forward a left fist and connects squarely with the smaller man's chest. He flies back several feet, but doesn't lose his footing. Crooked Nose cracks his neck to the side before plunging forward, throwing a fist toward the brute's face. The larger man shifts out of the way and throws a punch to Crooked Nose's stomach. He goes down right in front of me. The floor goes wild,
Shouts of, "Ponton! Ponton! Ponton!"
resound, and I assume that must be the brute.
"Get up," a few voices beg, trying to encourage the young man struggling for breath on the ground. "Better luck next time," Leandro says to me with a shrug.
But this isn't over yet.
I step forward, grab Crooked Nose by his sweaty arm, and yank him to his feet.
He leans against me as a huge gulp of air finally whistles through his lungs.
"Now listen," I say in a low growl. "I have a lot of money placed on you, and you're not going to let me lose it, are you?"
"He's too strong, miss," the man says with unsteady breaths.
"He's got at least one bruised rib on the right side. Quit aiming for his face and take a swing lower. Break his bones."
Without another word, I get behind him and toss him into the fray. Leandros wrinkles his nose.
"You smell of sweaty mail.
As if you could smell anything over the stench of ale on my breath."
"Would that I were close enough to smell your breath, but..."
The fight continues, and Leandros doesn't finish his sentence. Not as the small contender feints toward Ponton with a left fist toward the head before immediately following with a powerful jab to the ribs. Spittle goes flying out of Ponton's mouth, but Crooked Nose doesn't stop there. With a flurry of quick punches, he pummels Ponton as ruthlessly as a baker would knead dough. In only seconds, the bigger man falls.
He doesn't rise.
The crowd silences. I lift my skirts as I step over the brute and raise my little contender's fist into the air. Then the noise is explosive, my ears fit to bursting from the force of it. Notes and coins trade hands in a flurry, and the winner leans over to plant a bloody kiss on my cheek. I'm too high off the victory to care. Satisfied, I return to my spot, and the boy with the cup is back, brandishing an enormous wad of notes at me.
250 nekos, miss! An excellent wager! But wouldn't you like to place it on the next match? No one is that lucky only once in the games. You've a natural eye for talent. What say keep this for you, and place it on your victor once again?"
"Maybe next time," I say, taking my money and tucking it away. I can't keep the smug smile from my lips as I turn to Leandros.
"What did you say to him?"
he asks, looking dumbfounded at his champion lying still on the floor.
"He only needed a lady's favor to find the courage to win the fight."
The mediator quiets the room with a whistle.
"Who will fight our new champion? Who's ready to earn some money in the ring?"
I reach for Leandros' arm to hoist it into the air for him, but he snatches it back. I am quite content with watching. I let out a giggle, the ale still doing wonderful things for my head as we watch a new contestant enter the circle. Though I don't place any more money, Leandros and I make our own private bets on who will win. After three more matches, Leandros has completely lost his pride.
"No one guesses right so many times in a row."
"It's not luck," I say. "It's careful observation." Despite my having won every private bet between the two of us, Leandros looks doubtful. I suppose I will have to continue proving it to him. But the floor begins to clear, the men in the circle leaving, soaking people who don't get out of the way quick enough in sweat.
"The night is still young. The matches are done already?" I ask.
Leandro shakes his head, a new grin surfacing.
"Only the matches between the men."
"Between the men?" I repeat. A mop swipes over the floor. Then some sort of powder is sprinkled in the area, meant for the contenders. Chalk, I would guess. Then a lady walks into the ring. She's dressed plainly, but scandalously, with her skirts hiked up to mid-thigh, held in place by strings.
"So she can fight," I realize.
She's very impressive, all lithe muscle and feminine grace. With round cheeks, small eyes, and a dainty nose, no one would ever guess how she spent her nights. She wears her hair pulled out of her face, pinned tight to her scalp. Her face is all business, not a smile to be found.
"Who will compete against last night's champion, the Viper?"
the mediator asks, walking in a circle to survey the crowd, which has somehow doubled. A body from behind me pushes, and I shove my hips right back at it. Why do they have the ladies go last? I ask.
Because they're far more entertaining to watch, Leandros answers.
No doubt it has something to do with the fact that the crowd gets an excellent view of their legs. Leandros says nothing, confirming my suspicions. Finally, a woman steps into the chalked-off circle. She's bigger boned than the viper, with more curves on her, but by the slower way she moves, I know she won't win. The viper will beat her, I say to Leandros.
I'll take that bet.
He loses. In seconds. The viper has well earned her name. Her strikes come rapidly, one after the next, and the bigger woman has no chance of fending them off. She shouldn't have let her opponent strike first. The viper faces off against a second opponent. A third. The barmaid comes by with more ale, and I lose track of how many more drinks I take from her. There are things I'm supposed to be asking, Leandros. Questions about Callias and if he's had past lovers. I'm supposed to learn something. Something that will help with my reputation, I think. But I can't quite remember, and right now I don't care one bit about any of it. I'm having far too much fun watching the viper. And I notice that every time she's about to go in for a jab, she clenches her jaw ever so slightly. Her movements are fairly predictable. She likes to start high, striking the face to disorient her opponents before moving down lower to the stomach and knocking the wind out of them.
Who's next? The mediator asks. Who will face our champion and win a cut of the house's earnings if you're victorious? How about you?
He singles out a young petite girl at the front of the circle. She shakes her head vehemently.
You?
He approaches another girl. This one's sturdier, better built for fighting, but she too declines. Maybe it's the ale, or the high from all of my previous victories. Perhaps it's my deep-down desire to be acknowledged by the world. I will compete, I say. Leandro snaps his neck around, a look of confusion crossing his features, as though someone perhaps threw their voice in my direction.
Excellent! We have a contender! Step forward, young miss.
I move my legs, but Leandro grips my arm in a vice.
What are you doing?
Competing.
You can't do that. The king will have my head.
I lean forward. Good thing we need never tell him of this.
Alessandra, you're a lady.
Not tonight, I remind him, and yank back my arm before stepping into the circle. I look down at my heavy skirts, but I lose my balance as I do so. Luckily, I catch myself before toppling over. Does anyone have a tie they could lend me? No fewer than 5 men rip hairbands, cravats, belts, or other items from their person to hand over. I accept a belt and use it to heft my skirts up and away from my legs before cinching it all in the back. Several whistles sound appreciatively. I'm glad Leandros gave me scraps to wear tonight. I'd hate to ruin one of my own dresses.
What do you call yourself, miss?
The mediator asks me. I think to give my real first name, but I rather like the idea of something more fun, such as the viper. An image of Callias comes to mind, of the role I desire so fiercely. Call me the Shadow Queen. The mediator shouts the title for the crowd to hear. The boy with the cup runs around to the outside, and the gentlemen and ladies place their bets.
Step up to the center, ladies.
I keep my eyes on her chins. Yes. There are 2 of them. Didn't she have 1 when she first started fighting?
Fight, the mediator says as he slaps his hand on the ground.
The viper strikes high toward my face immediately, as I knew she would. I drop down in a crouch and shove my fist as hard as it will go into the middle of her stomach. She careens backward, her arms going to where I struck her. The crowd goes wild, and my hand throbs. I know enough to keep my thumb outside my fist, but my skin and knuckles are unused to such contact. The viper recovers an instant later, shaking out her hands as if she can will the pain away. She bounces toward me, and I keep my eyes on her face. Her jaw clenches, her left fist coming forward. I sidestep, trying to get in a jab toward her face, but she blocks with an arm like steel, the movement sending a jolt up my arm. She follows with a punch to my face. I don't dodge in time. Her fist connects just below my eye, and my neck cracks backward from the force of it. Gravity claims me, pulling me toward the ground. I can see rows and rows of pant-clad legs from where I land. They're spinning. No, the whole room is. I feel liquid running down my face. Blood, tears, spit. Somewhere distantly, I think I hear Leandros's voice. Then everything goes dark. Chapter 14.
You foolish, foolish girl, Leandro says yet again when we reach the castle in the early hours of the morning. Since I regained consciousness, he's done nothing but shove bread and water down my throat. I've sort of sobered up, but the left side of my face feels like someone threw a brick at it. Compliments of the viper. We walk up a dead hallway, the servants and staff having long since retired to their beds. It seemed like a good idea at the time, I say. Next time, don't drink so much. That peasant ale is deceptively potent. All ale is potent when you have 6 glasses. I wince as I tentatively touch the area around my eye. I can't believe I bruised my best feature. I don't know what I'll do about the black eye. I'll need to work a miracle with my face powders to cover it up. We reach my door, and Leandros drops his voice as he faces me. All your features are the best. No other woman holds a candle to you. He leans forward, kissing the black spot around my eye. When he pulls back, he looks down at my lips. It was an incredible night. One I won't forget any time soon. And Leandros is handsome, far too handsome for his own good. I raise a hand into his golden brown hair, slide my fingers to the back of his head, about to draw him near. But then I stop. I'm here to woo the king, not his childhood friend. But would he really find out about one kiss? It wouldn't be one kiss. I've no doubt Leandros is a fantastic kisser. And I'd be dragging him backward and into my room before long. Do I want a kingdom or a tumble in the sheets? It shouldn't be so hard to make this decision, but it's been weeks since my last dalliance. With a sigh, I let my hand drop. Good night, Leandros. Thank you for tonight. I won't forget it. A sad grin hits his lips, but ever the gentleman, he nods and strides down the hallway and away from me. I already regret the decision as I'm left alone and cold in the empty corridor, but it is far too late to change my mind. I dig out my key from the wad of notes in my pocket and let myself into the room. I kick off my shoes first, empty my pockets out onto a table. Then I look up. Callias is in the room. He sits on my bed, his legs crossed in front of him. His shirt sleeves are unbuttoned, but he still wears his gloves. No vest or jacket, but a small expanse of his upper chest shows without a cravat or top button done up. Though he looks relaxed, he's perfectly alert. Did you have a pleasant evening? He asks without looking at me, no hint of his mood to be found in his voice.
I did.
It would appear Leandros did as well. Why didn't you kiss him goodnight?
He was listening. He had to be.
Oh, I've never been more grateful for my courage in turning Leandros away. A lady never kisses after the first outing.
So you wanted to? Now his eyes snap upward. They narrow in on my black eye like an arrow honing for a target. He rises and strides up to me. What happened? Did Leandros?
Of course not.
He raises a hand up to my face,
and I hold perfectly still. A single gloved finger reaches forward and briefly brushes the skin beneath my eye. The leather is smooth and cold.
Goliath's hand tightens into a fist and drops to his side. He took me boxing.
Boxing?
He took me to watch the matches. After I won several bets in a row on which player would beat the other, I decided to try my own hand at it. Callias looks as though someone has just presented him a question with an impossible answer.
Why? Why the devils would you do that? You were beaten.
I raise myself up tall. Well, yes, but I had a marvelous time until then. A breathy laugh escapes the king's lips, and I can tell the humor isn't kind.
Why are you here? I snap.
I canceled my evening of meetings, he says. I thought to surprise you by taking you out tonight, but you weren't anywhere to be found. I thought to wait for you. How many hours have you spent sitting on my bed?
He runs his fingers through his hair in an angry swipe. Why would you spend the evening with Leandros?
Does it matter who I spent the evening with? He's kind and fun and actually has time for me. Callias is quiet for a moment, likely trying to come up with his next argument. I don't give him the chance. I agreed to your scheme, I say. I'm playing the part of your beau. But you know what else came with the deal, Callias? Friendship. You promised me a friend in you. You weren't delivering. I had to seek friendship elsewhere.
You have Rhoda and Hestia, he says.
Rhoda and Hestia aren't going to ask me to dance at parties. Do you know that no men will approach me? I'm off limits. It's as if I have contracted the plague.
He's silent.
Leandros and his friends are the only ones who treat me like a person rather than the future queen. Do you know why they empathize with me? Why they befriended me? Because they, too, know what it's like for you to call them friends and then cast them aside. Maybe I was tempted to kiss Leandros. Maybe I'm lonely. Surely you know what that's like.
Callias recoils, as though I slapped him.
I don't feel sorry. Not one bit. I'm not a doll that you can dress up and leave alone until you're ready to play with me, Callias. I'm a person, and if you can't respect that, I'll pack my things and leave tomorrow.
Oh, I really hope it's not the last of the ale talking.
Surely it's my sensible mind, knowing that Callias won't call my bluff, that he'll apologize and beg me to stay, that he'll change his ways and start paying me attention. Or perhaps I couldn't control the threat, drunk or not. Callias angers me in a way no person ever has, not even my father. I hold my breath, waiting for him to say something. The king's shadows flare, like flames engulfing his whole body. He turns without looking back and leaves, melting through the wall of solid stone. Oh dear, what have I done? I fall into bed. Despite how terribly wrong everything is going, I can't help but lose myself to exhaustion. Boxing, combined with the late hour, practically drags my mind away into oblivion. But just before I go, the skin about my blackened eye warms. Not with pain, not from the memory of the kiss pressed there, but at the ghost of a gloved hand. My head throbs as soon as I'm awake. It's a wonderful combination of too much ale and a poor night's sleep. And on top of that, everything has unraveled. What choice do I have but to follow up on my threat and order the servants to begin packing my things? The words burn through my throat as I give the orders, and I snap at two different footmen who move too slowly for my liking. After a moment, I realize this is a job that will take hours. There's no point in waiting around to watch them finish. I should try to go about my day as normal. Rhoda and Hestia hold a conversation while I stare at the empty seat at the head of the long table in the great hall. Callias isn't there. Will I see him again before I leave? And why the devils am I waiting for my things to be packed before leaving? They will arrive at my father's estate, whether I accompany them or not. Actually, I suppose I'm not going back to the Maesis estate. How can I, after insisting I didn't need father? And honestly, I'd rather not see his face too soon. No, I'll go to an inn, stay on my own for a while until I can rethink everything. The chair remains empty during the entire luncheon. Of course he doesn't want to see me. I've lost him. I've lost a throne, a crown, the admiration of a kingdom, the power of being a queen. I take my time returning to my rooms after spending the afternoon in the sitting room sewing, as though some brilliant plan to salvage everything will come to me if I just have enough time. What am I going to do? Am I really letting myself lose everything? First, I should probably take a look at my eye to see if the face powder is still doing its job to cover my bruise. Then, I don't know what will come next. If my room is all packed, I'll leave. If not, I'll dally a little longer. I let myself in, dreading the fact that I don't hear the flurry of feet. They must be done. But as I walk through my rooms, I find the unexpected. It's as if I'd never ordered anything's removal. The room has been cleaned, the bed made, the furniture dusted, but the wardrobe is still full of my clothes. The vanity holds all my cosmetics. Nothing is packed. These lazy, horrible servants! I stomp back out into the hallway, eager to find someone to yell at, and am instantly hailed down by a servant.
"My lady," he says before I can utter a word, "the king requests your presence. Would you care to follow me?"
"Yes, I do care very much. Has Callias more to say about last night's jaunt? Does he want to publicly banish me from the palace? Cast me out for attending an outing with his once friend?" But if there's even a chance that he wishes to forget the argument and have things go back to the way they were, I must take it. I can seduce a king even if I only see him for a half hour, 2 or 3 times a day, surely. I can get over attending parties where no men will talk to me. It's only for a short time, until I can secure the king in marriage and then kill him. Then I can have all the male companionship I want. But blast, why does Callias have to make everything so damned difficult? The servant leads me to the first floor, taking me out a back exit of the palace. He stops before a simple carriage and holds open the door for me. Inside, I see an outline of black pants and fine shoes. Callias? Is he going to personally escort me from the palace? Why? Grasping my best attempt at maintaining my dignity, I step into the carriage and sit opposite the king. The door shuts behind me, and Callias uses the rapier lying on the seat next to him to tap the roof of the carriage twice. After a slap of reins and the jolting movement of the horses, we're off. The shadows dance along the cushions about his legs and shoulders. He wears a cotton white shirt, no jacket or vest, though he wears his gloves. His pants are very simple today. His shoes are fine, but I suspect it's because he doesn't own anything else. By his face, I can tell he's waiting for me to ask him a question. Why are we here? Where are you taking me? Are you still angry? But I don't give him the satisfaction. I turn up my nose and look out the window, watching the passing scenery. It's not much to look at. Homes and stone streets and common folk going about their daily business. But then the carriage turns, and I'm pitched right out of my seat and toward Callias's lap. There's a sensation like smoke from a fire passing over my limbs, and my nose inhales the lavender, mint, musky smell of him. But I don't feel the outline of Callias against my body. When I open my eyes, I realize I haven't landed on him. I've gone through him. I'm inside him. I'm on my knees on the seat he occupies, him and his shadows engulfing me. Ah! I thrust myself backward, worried that he'll somehow stick to me, that I'll have captured the shadows, that I'll be forever encased in darkness. The smoky sensation abates at the same time the carriage comes to an abrupt halt. I have to plant my feet more firmly not to topple forward into the king once again. But then I realize, I touched him. I broke the law. He's already cross with me. Now what will he do? I look up, see that Callias is still all in one piece. I haven't somehow scattered him by toppling forward into the swirling, incorporeal mass of him.
His face is still as stone, despite it not being as solid as such.
Everything all right, sire?
The driver calls down. Callias's eyes never leave mine. We're fine. Continue on.
Yes, your majesty.
We're traversing up the mountain, I realize. Not down. That's why I fell out of my seat. Why I feel as though I'm constantly about to lose it once more. And now I fear the king is taking me somewhere to kill me. Could I run away? Leap from the carriage and disappear before he can follow? Then what will become of me? I should try. I should think of something. Are you real? I ask, the words jumping from my lips before I can hold them back. Quite real, he says in response. But you're not solid. You're all shadows. Did I hurt you? Is that why you don't wish to be touched? Are you going to kill me? The questions all topple out, each one starting before the last one has quite finished. He fingers the handle of his rapier. Hopefully.